this is a workshop on the Green News Network, and so it's the live stream platform that we developed out of the Stein Baraka campaign. So I'll be doing just a sort of a background overview, and then Michael is going to be sort of going into the technical production process. This is kind of like a tool that we kind of invented on the fly as we were, sort of transitioning and trying to get past the media blackout from the Stein campaign. And then Jillian Thomas, who was our social media director, will be going over some best practices for live stream video and social media. So this is basically, talking about the background, the actual like production process, and then also kind of how we have learned lessons from using social media as a political instrument. So. Okay, hi everyone, and welcome to our Facebook viewers right now. We are at the Democracy Convention in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I know all of you in the room know this. I am saying this for the benefit of our viewers at home, which is on GNN, on the Green News Network. This is a workshop on the GNN platform that we developed as a kind of spin-off project from the Stein Baraka campaign. I'm going to talk a little bit about its origins, sort of, you know, where the idea and the platform and the sort of launch pad came from. I'll talk a little bit about our numbers and our analytics and sort of what I think are really, really interesting lessons that we've learned. This is our technical producer, Michael O'Neill. And he will be going into sort of the technical production process, the nuts and bolts of GNN, how to produce a quality live stream and publish it on Facebook and using the software that we use for GNN. And then over here is our social media director, Jillian Thomas. She is a correct social media marketer, and she will be going into some of the best practices and the sort of lessons that we learned, so that, you know, once you've got live streams and you sort of have the production up and running, also the other task is to engage people and build your audience. Okay. Do we want to do some introductions as to who's here? Who here is an active live streamer now? All right, Noah, Lance. All right, great. Great. Let's start with y'all first and talk about your platforms, and then we'll go around the room as well. Or it was just go around the room. So let's start with
Tana.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
And I'm sorry. What did you want to know?
Just a brief introduction. Your name, where you're from, if you have a live stream platform, what that is, and why you're here.
I'm here because I'm from North Carolina. I have a low power FM show on our local low-power radio station, and I'm here to learn as much as I can so we can actually improve what we're doing. My show is a political show, and it addresses issues that don't get covered in our local, including PBS or NPR.
Michael?
My name is Michael Harrington from Chicago. I'm the chapter chair of the Green Party of Chicago, and I'm here to listen to them.
Great, thank you.
I'm Geraldine Leanne. I'm just an innocent bystander.
Do you watch live streams?
I never heard of it before.
All right. Well,
I'm really interested.
Are you on Facebook?
Yes.
Okay. Great. So we'll talk about that and sort of the nature and the value of Facebook live video. Pat, you want to?
Oh, I'm sorry. What,
We're just doing introductions right now. Same thing as last session.
I'm Pat Humphries. I'm half of the duo Endless Revolution. I'm a political songwriter and activist.
I
live in the San Diego area right now.
I'm Cesar Vicinos from St. Paul, and Facebook activist.
All right. Facebook activist. Noah?
My name is Noah Chonga. I host a podcast and live stream show on YouTube and Facebook with Noah, political social commentary, pop culture, that type of stuff. So I'm here just to see how I can just learn more about what you guys have been doing. And actually, I'm doing a session later on this afternoon, Media Revolt, about basically helping us get outside of corporate you know, corporate controlled spaces. So,
thank you.
Terry, is that your name?
I'm Terry Weeks. I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida. My partner and I do a progressive radio show on a station that we actually go out to five stations in the Tampa Bay area. He's also a videographer. We're developing a website, just starting to get into the live streaming and social media thing, looking to expand our reach and to learn more.
Hi, I'm Lance Smith. I'm from San Francisco, and I did my first live stream about maybe 6 months ago when Standing Rock was like really active issue, and then I did my first live stream interviews at the California State Green Party Assembly about a month ago, and interviewed some people who were running for office, and I just want to learn how to be the media, because the corporate media is just a complete propaganda tool at this point. And so, you know, just my very small way, I wanna just learn more about that. And the Green News Network has really inspired me, and as well as my outlets.
Great, thank you.
Bob? Bob Park, program director for the smallest of five low-power radio stations in the greater Madison, Wisconsin area. And I'm interested in learning about Facebook Live audio, which is recent.
Debbie
Metke from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I wrote a book called My Big Fat United Planet, and I've backpacked by myself around the world and believe there are political ways we can get the world working together to deal with our big problems. And I'm very interested in learning more social media. I just brought a big lecturer to three cities, Chicago, Madison, and Milwaukee, and it was all about social media to get out a crowd for that. So
wonderful.
Thank you.
Allison. My name is Allison Renville. I am the co-lead organizer for Dakotas for America. We are a political action committee working to get out the Native vote and elect our Lakota for public office. We are looking forward to getting a Lakota for governor in South Dakota right now in 2018. I'm also a Bernie delegate, and then I have spent part of last year in Standing Rock on the ground, because I am not only Sisseton and Wahpeton Dakota from this area here in Minneapolis, but I am a Standing Rock tribal member. So, you know, I have a lot of friends and family there, and we spent a lot of time just doing this stuff for the last year and a half, so.
Yeah, and we were just talking about how the incredible work that y'all did out of Standing Rock. So, thanks. Again, I realize I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Mel Figueroa. I'm the executive director of the Green News Network, producer rather. I was the press director for the Stein-Baraka campaign, and a whole bunch of other things. So let me get started real quick with some background. So the Green News Network is basically a spin-off project of the Stein-Baraka campaign, and specifically Jill Stein's campaign Facebook page. We had a, you know, of course, with third-party candidate, we experienced lots of media blackouts, and when you know, a lot of times the curtain came down from mainstream media, and they sort of stopped covering us, we had to rely heavily on social media in order to keep the word out, keep getting the word out, and keep organizing for the vote. We ended up at the end of the campaign with over 650,000 followers on the Facebook page. You know, we wanted to, like, we have this huge audience, like, let's keep it going, let's keep the word out, let's keep, you know, updating stuff on the active struggles that we, you know, strove to highlight and lift up in the course of the campaign. So, the Green News Network kind of grew out of that. We, you know, again, Jill Stein, I like to say she cornered the market on Facebook Live, which was an emerging technology at the time. You know, we learned a lot of lessons from it, and we keep experimenting with it to keep it going. This was, you know, so and as you can see, sort of our current statistics, you know, we still have hundreds of thousands of people. We still reach hundreds of thousands of people each week. We still have tens of thousands of post engagements, and our videos get about 10 to 12,000 viewers per show, and for special live streams, we can have like even more than that. We now have two regular shows per week. On Mondays, is at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific, is Democracy in Action with David Cobb, who is the campaign manager of the Stein-Baraka campaign. On Wednesdays, Jill Stein hosts her own Fireside Chats, also at the same time, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 5 Pacific. And the Ajamu Baraka show was just retired, Voice from the Margins, but he also had a weekly show on Thursdays. And again, it's around 10,000 viewers per show that we still get, you know, again, 8 months after the 10 months after the campaign ended, which is pretty great. We also do special programming. Our first big project was the Occupy inauguration in Washington, D.C. On the weekend of Trump's inauguration. It was a marathon, 7-hour teach-in with, like, tons of people, activists. You know, we tried to engage as many issues as we could to kind of, like, give people a sense not only of the problems that we were facing going into the Trump administration, but also what a lot of people and activists were still doing about it and still activated and going, and try to hook people up, again, with these movements. Jill Stein did a national tour a series of tours in March and April, and kind of, you know, when she visits places, she will do some live streams through GNN, and so, you know, people can get a sense of, you know, the work that she continues to do beyond the campaign. We also use GNN to, you know, highlight press conferences. One of the highlights was the press conference that we did in front of Trump Tower during the recount in our kind of show of defiance. We also used GNN to uplift new green candidates that are running for office. You know, a lot of the mainstream criticism was, oh, you only show up every four years. And, like, that's totally not true, right? So we used GNN and this big platform in order to lift up the down-ticket candidates and all the wonderful candidates that are running for office this year and in 2018. We've just recently live-streamed several sessions from the Green Party's annual national meeting in Newark, New Jersey. And, of course, we are covering the Democracy Convention right here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So for all of you tuning in on the live stream, please do tune in this week. We will continue to be broadcasting, again, some great content and some great people at the Democracy Convention who are doing great work all over the nation. And that's kind of what, you know, the kind of sense of mission was, you know. And this is something we kind of, like, discovered. Like I said, Facebook Live was just beginning to be implemented. I don't know exactly when it came up as a feature, do you know?
Well, there were some features that were coming online mm-hmm. around that time with Facebook Live. Mm-hmm. So for most of Facebook Live's existence, it was just the phone, right?
Right.
And then, you know, then some of the software we're going to talk about, became more commonly known and also got better. So a few things came together at the right time for us right. to leap in when we were able to during the campaign.
Absolutely. So thank you for that, Michael. The big breakout moment where we actually realized the power of Facebook Live was during the DNC. So, I was press director, I was setting up, you know, the TV interviews and whatever, and, you know, ABC called, and we're like, ooh, ABC, and then they're like, well, you know, this is for their live stream platform, and we're like, of course, they're not going to put us on TV, they're just going to put us on their, you know, their online platform. So, so Jill went on with John Carl, and I remember the moment like it was yesterday, where he's grilling her and, like, trying to, you know, put her into a corner on a bunch of things. And I remember that she literally turned her body and started speaking directly to the phone and spoke directly to the people who were watching. And I'm watching on the phone, and I'm watching the numbers just start exploding, right? And the producer comes up to me, and she's like, this is incredible. I'm like, oh, my God, there's like 200,000 people I've like already reached on this. Whoa, you know? Later, I found out that we had broken ABC's live stream record by 10 times that day.
Wow.
And that was a consistent feature throughout the campaign. was that, you know, every time that she did a Facebook live stream, whether it was our own or and especially with other media outlets who had just started, just begun to, you know, mount their Facebook platforms. I mean, like, CNN was still using a phone, as far as I remember, right? But every time she did that, she consistently was at or above the record levels of viewership that even those mainstream outlets had. So this was a powerful tool that we just, like, literally we were at the right place at the right time, because it really, really helped, especially around debate time when, of course, the curtain came down on us, that brief window that we had where we could have sort of access to the American public through mainstream media began to close. And so we were like, you know, what the heck are we going to do? And we're like, hey, we have this live stream thing, right? So we decided, and it was an amazing, like, you know, like seat of your pants kind of experience to invent a live broadcast of Jill Stein responding to the presidential debates in real time, right? And, like, it was literally, we had to invent this out of thin air, you know? We did the same thing for Ajamu Baraka for the vice presidential debates and for the second and third debates. In total, we reached a total of 26 million viewers through the debate live streams. That was the largest audience for a third-party presidential candidate since Ross Perot was allowed in the televised debates in 1992. So that's something that we are particularly proud of in terms of the ability of online live streaming to reach a large audience. Another one that I'm particularly proud of and, you know, I keep putting in the front of my mind when I think about the power of live streams is when we went to Baton Rouge after the flooding. And, you know, Jill really wanted to go down there and see for herself the damage and to visit people and see how she could help. And, you know, a lot of us were like, well, you know, when a famous person goes down there, it's kind of like not really cool because then there's a media circus and then they're just taking resources away. And, like, you know, like it's the, and, you know, I know Hillary and Obama were like weighing the same thing. And then we were like, what about this new live stream thing? Because, you know, it's a big platform. We can reach a whole lot of people. But, like, we don't even have to invite traditional media at all. We don't even have to tell them we're going, right? Mm-hmm. We'll go down there. We'll be respectful. We will ask the people on the ground what they need, you know, and how can we offer our platform as a way to lift up their voices, their struggles, so that they can give, so they can tell their own story and also try to get mobilized, you know, help, right? So we went down there. We did not tell one media person at all. So we went down there, coordinated with the Green Party of Louisiana and local residents, and we live streamed. We live streamed the cleanup, you know, like we went in there and started cleaning up stuff. We, like, toured the neighborhood. We talked to people. And, you know, we raised, in 2 hours, we raised $16,000 for the residents of that community. And it was funny because the next day there was an article that said, you know, Jill Stein did this better than Hillary Clinton, in that she just demonstrated that it was possible for a high-profile person to go to something like a disaster zone, you know, do what they can, lift up voices, and, you know, rally some help for the residents without taking resources, without detracting or putting their own frame on it. And so that's another thing that, again, it was something that we discovered that, you know, I was particularly proud of because we were able to do what we have wanted to do as grassroots organizers, right, and do it differently. Yeah.
Just a quick question. Do you have to really let people know you're going to be live streaming something? I mean, I just brought this big speaker to town, and a guy wanted to live stream it, and it's like, well, who's going to watch it? They don't know you're doing this.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, now there's live stream. I mean, Facebook itself has a notification thing where you can kind of set that up.
You don't have to, but it's a good idea.
It is a good idea.
Julian will be talking about
it. It's a best practice.
It can only help.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly.
If you have people following you, they'll get a notification.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part of a good strategy, though, would be to send, like, a post going out that has kind of, like, a TV guide that you can let people know what's going on so that they can plan for it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have, like, a TV guide that lives on the GNN Facebook page, not Jill Stein's, but Green News Network. We also syndicate to it. And so, you know, one of the things we found was that live stream, and Facebook Live in particular, because you get that instant feedback, you get all the emojis, so you know when you're saying something back, because you get all the angry ones, and you know when people like what you're saying, because you get all the hearts, you know. It was a great way of being able to, do a lot of the grassroots stuff that, like, mainstream, that you couldn't do with mainstream media, and at the same time be in a dialogue, right, with audiences. And so, you know, Jill does that on her fireside chat, where, like, you know, I usually, because, you know, she's concentrated on what she's saying, so she can't, like, read the scrolling comments. So there's usually a producer, either Michael will do it for David's show, and I do it for Jill, where, you know, we feed them questions, and so that they're interacting with the audience in real time. And I think that, like, that kind of dialogue quality, it kind of breaks down that divide between the presenter and the audience. And, you know, it's been really interesting, too, and also kind of, you know, reading the feedback from what people do. Okay. Just a quick thing on the numbers. So, I think this is one, you know, because of DNN, this is the DNC here, so you see, like, the total number of page likes, like, just shot up, and it hasn't gone away. You know, people have not unfollowed Jill's page, so they continue to, you know, to receive political content and to be able to learn about the stuff that we're involved in, and you know, the struggles that are going on, social justice struggles that are lifted up, and people aren't getting driven away by it, which is great. Another really important thing is that the great majority of our total reach is organic. You know how the little Facebook boost, like, you know, send us to 2,000 more people. This shows that it's, you know, it helps at certain times, but it's not really a big part of what we do. You know, the organic reach, you know, this is really important too, because, in the previous session, we went over, like, okay, you can have this big, like, you know, billion-dollar paid platform, but when it really comes to post-engagement, that doesn't matter. It's organizing the people that does. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of our wheelhouse, right? Yeah.
And you didn't find yourself, the campaign, being blocked on social media at any point?
There are some issues, and we can get into that in the Q&A. Like, so there's algorithm issues, there's sometimes technical and, like, streaming issues. So, you know, there's always, they're, like, blocking us, which could be true, you know. So we're still trying to sort of get a sense of what that is. We do get a fair number of trolls, of course, and we get troll slayers. We got a lot of DNC trolls during the campaign, a lot of Trump trolls during the recount. So we kind of got it from both of them, right? But on the whole, we get pretty much a ton of likes, right? This was post-engagement, so people engaged a lot in the, you know, liking. Here's the trolls thing. Okay. All right, so let me switch it over. Are you connected, Michael, to your presentation? So he's going to go into, basically how, here you go, here's your HDMI cord. Here, can you put it up here? He'll go into the actual production, how we make GNN happen.
Excellent. All right, so yes, my name is Michael O'Neill, and I am the technical director for the Green News Network. I'm going to go over the actual hardware and some of the software of how we do what we do. And I'm going to break it up into two sections. One is the mobile platform, and that would be streaming off of your phone or a tablet. And then I'm also going to get into streaming off of a computer and using software to do that. Now, I'm so excited that we have some radio activists in the room, because, as was mentioned, Facebook Audio is a thing now that you can do audio-only live streams. And so we're going to have tell you a couple things that you can do to enhance the audio, particularly on your mobile platform. I just wanted to, before I forget, I just heard about a platform called Concert Window. So you're familiar. So Concert Window is like a live streaming platform specifically for musicians and performers who are almost like setting up like a virtual, like, you know, when you like put your music case out in front of you to like collect donations while you're playing on the subway or whatever. So you're playing online and you're collecting donations through that. And people do it for fundraisers, musicians do it to, you know, fund their gigs or, you know, their tours or pay their rent or whatever. So that's something I've just only learned about Now, we've been talking about Facebook Live, but just to very briefly mention that some of the software I'm going to be talking about can go to just about any live streaming service that is out there. And with YouTube Live, right, is an obvious, you know, competitor. And for more like geek and gaming-oriented stuff, if you're able to incorporate that with your politics, there's Twitch.tv, Livestream.com is, you know, one of the predecessors for this era of live streaming that we're in right now. And I just want to give credit to Craig Seaman of the Green Party United States Media Committee, who has been doing a lot of live streaming work for the Green Party at the national level for years, and he's taught me about 90% of what I know about this stuff. So, I'm going to do my best to keep track of time here. So getting into the mobile, right? So you're working with a tablet or a phone. There are two types of broadcast that I think are particularly well-suited to the mobile, and they have to do with immediacy. The first is the immediate breaking news, right? Like, we are in Ferguson, right? We're in Ferguson during, you know, the street protests, and people have their you know, mobile, you know, cameras out, and they are live streaming, you know, as they're going, right? And then there are also the, what I'm going to call, emotionally immediate broadcasts, where it's kind of a confessional setup. So you're talking directly to your audience, and that is what Jill Stein's fireside chats are mostly structured as. And frequently, she's just broadcasting straight from her phone, right? And so when you have that kind of immediate setting, whether it's immediate events that are happening around you that you're capturing on the fly, or an emotionally immediate connection where you are speaking directly to your people, having a fairly simple setup is just fine. The expectations that people have for that kind of setup are not high in terms of video quality and audio quality. They want to be able to see what's going on, and they want to be able to hear you, ideally, you know, without it being painful. But aside from that, they're there for the connection, either to something that's happening right now in the world that they're interested in, or to you as a person that you are communicating to them. So, bearing that in mind, there are some things that you can do to kind of enhance that setup in terms of video and audio quality. The first thing is having a stable shot is foundational, right? That's the kind of foundation on your Maslow's hierarchy of live streaming needs, if you will. And so having a tripod and having a tripod adapter is step one. So if you have a selfie stick, chances are that, number one, that's a good thing to have in those kind of, you know, breaking news situations, right, where you want to keep mobile. But also for stable live streams, I pulled this off of a selfie stick. They have a little thread mount at the bottom, and then you can just attach it to one of these little tripods like this. You can see we've got the camera that's live streaming right now is on a larger Gorilla, is the name of the company. It's a Gorilla Pod. And so,
G-O,
yeah. And so that's suitable for just kind of propping up on a desk in front of you and talking into the phone. And but this will also work on a more conventional tripod that you know set up in a room and can swivel around and things like that. So you want to make sure that your phone adapter is wide enough for your phone. You've got the phablet-sized phones and larger phones that sometimes, or if your phone has a case on it, it might be too wide to fit. So take a look at that if you're shopping around for these. If you're using a tablet, a desktop stand like this I find is really great. This is an Arduro, A-D-U-R-O stand. And the nice thing about this is you can put a 7-inch tablet in this in portrait mode. This kickstand actually rotates, so you can do different orientations, right? So if you have a 10-inch tablet, it'll hold it fine in a you know, landscape, you know, widescreen orientation. And then with a 7-inch tablet or with a phone, then you can adjust this so that it's in portrait, or you can, what you do is you grip it in portrait mode, then just turn it on its side and rest it on the table like that, right? So this is really handy. You want to have your camera close to eye line, as close as you can. And that's that your people aren't looking up your nose, at least. I mean, a little bit of like a downward look can help with that sense of like emotional intimacy. But again, you don't want people staring up at your nose, right? And generally speaking, you want to be facing your light source, right? So if you've got an open window behind you with sunlight, you are likely going to come across as a silhouette, and they're not going to be able to see your face or anything like that. So a good rule of thumb is that if the light is just a little bit uncomfortable going into your eyes, that's good lighting. And if it's not uncomfortable, then you're not being properly lit. But I mean, it's fine. I mean, people have, like I said, different expectations for if you are just, you know, if you're talking directly to them or if you're doing, that's more of like a formal presentation. Yes?
Is there something about, you know, shooting up someone's face versus down or...
Well, shooting down, I mean, it's just not gonna look particularly natural. I mean, if you're shooting an event, right, and you're shooting from up in the balcony like we were at the plenary the other night, that's fine. If it's like looking down at you, that would be unconventional.
I mean, if you're close up with somebody, I've been interviewing people and I don't quite know about lighting and shadows really that much.
Just
do your best. Put a light on them and,
yeah,
you know,
so I've got a lot of material to plow through, so I'm gonna hold further questions till the end. But iteration, right? So try something, see what the results were, and then improve upon that. This takes a lot of practice. People who have done, you know, live broadcast on the radio or elsewhere, you know that a lot of things can happen. There's a lot of scenarios that you just can't really be prepared for until you're thrown into them. And then you know for the next time. So, you know, test your results, ask other people what they think, and, you know, go from there. All right, so we've talked about how to get a stable shot. Audio. With the camera audio... Again, if you're running and gunning in a, you know, immediate protest situation, or if you're in a relatively quiet room and you're talking directly to the camera or to your phone, that's fine. But if you want to raise your game a little bit, this is called a Sarmonic Smart Rig Plus. And what this does, this is like $75. And it plugs into the headphone jack of your phone, and it can provide up to two simultaneous microphone inputs, including XLR plugs, and it can provide phantom power. It's got a 9-volt battery in it. So you could actually have a wireless mic or a wired lavalier mic or a handheld mic, right? You could have an XLR handheld mic plugged into here, have this tethered to your selfie stick, plugged into your phone. And what we did, actually, another special event that we covered was the climate march that happened earlier this spring. Mm-hmm. So giving credit to that.
Right.
And so we had, I had a camera person who had my phone on a selfie stick with this tethered to it and a wireless receiver. And then I had a wireless microphone, and I was doing, like, you know, man on the street or person on the street interviews to people at the march and able to have them talk into a proper microphone and it going out over the live stream. So, and this has, it's got gain adjustment on it, and this can work also for a camera, or even for your laptop's microphone input. So you can have, if you're doing an interview between two people on camera, you know, you prop up your phone, and this wired lavalier mic goes for about $30, right? And this is it's got a little, like a watch battery in it. It's got a clip-on microphone. It's wired. It's got a very long cord. You could have two of these running into here, have this running into your phone, and then this acts as like a little audio mixer, basically, going into your phone or tablet.
How do you spell that?
S-A-R-A-M-O-N-I-C, Sarmonic Smart Rig Plus. And I've used it at a number of events, and it's kind of a game changer, actually. So you can use this in your camera. You can also use it, like I said, in your mobile device.
And who made the lavalier mic?
Oh, the lavalier. This is a Audio Technica. Now, for those of you who work in radio, they will tell you, like, when it comes to microphones, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
So, like, this is better than what's on your phone. But it's not going to emulate, like, a $200 lavalier microphone from Sennheiser or whatever. But the nice thing about this thing is, like, this can take an XLR input from, you know, whatever high-end microphone that you have. All right. And it's good to have an external battery pack for your phone or mobile device. And if you have a USB on-the-go connector, you can even, like, appropriate a tablet as a battery pack, basically. So if you have a tablet that you're not using to stream with, you're streaming with your phone can draw power from a tablet sometimes. But it's less complicated just to have a battery pack, which actually we're using right now for this live stream. And live streaming, as you can imagine, it uses a lot of energy, you know, in terms of like your phone's battery or a tablet's battery, and it uses a fair amount of data. So make sure you have a good understanding of what your data plan is before you're live streaming if you are planning on using your phone's 4G connection for that. Ideally, you're at a place where you have a reliable Wi-Fi connection, and you've run, I know, I see people shaking heads, and yes, Wi-Fi connections are frequently unreliable. And you're going to see in my when we talk about doing interviews, when you're live streaming from a computer, having a Ethernet connection is vastly preferable than just going off of Wi-Fi. But we'll get to that in a little bit. So we talked about battery pack. We talked about audio. We talked about a stable shot. Oh, the nice thing about this Audio-Technica thing is it actually comes with an adapter for the phone. So you don't have to get the smart rig widget to take, you know, external audio onto your phone. This has a little dongle that connects into your phone or tablet, and then there's a jack for your microphone. It's a mini jack. The smart rig does mini jack, quarter inch, and XLR. But it can only do two sources at a time, right? And it can do mono or stereo. So one microphone in one channel, one microphone in the other channel, or you can mix it to mono, and it'll be both in both headphones. So in theory, you can monitor your sound off of this if your smartphone recording app allows you to do that. But it also, if your laptop has an integrated mic jack with headphone jack, then you can use this, basically, so you can monitor your sound on your laptop and have an external microphone going in. So that is the mobile setup. And like I said, once you have, like, you know, an adapter like the smart rig, then you can get relatively sophisticated with your sound input. I mean, if you have a soundboard, right, that you can get mic-level sound out of, then you can just go into this. And now the mix coming from your event or your radio station or whatever is just going through this thing and being pumped out onto the internet for whatever platform that you're on. It's pretty cool. Let's transition now into broadcasting from your computer. And so the software I'm showing you right now is called Open Broadcast Studio, OBS. This is free software, free and open source. And there's a commercial version of this called Wirecast, and that costs like between $300 to $500. That's what the pros use, and it's great. I mean, it's got a lot of bells and whistles on it. It can live stream to more than one source at a time. It can do a lot of stuff. It's $300 to $500. So I use OBS. It doesn't have as many features as Wirecast does, but for anything that, like, we really wanted to do, like, this can handle it. Mm-hmm. And it's like having like an entire production station just in your laptop. And I got to give credit where credit is due. The main constituency that's been pushing for the development of OBS is actually like the video game community. Yeah, it's the video game streamers on Twitch and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, Minecraft streamers and first-person shooters and things like that. So we're just borrowing from them, you know? So the way OBS works is the software is free, but it does require a relatively powerful computer. Ideally, your computer will have what's called a discrete graphics card, okay? Computers that are around, especially if we're talking about PCs, like $400, $300, they tend to have what's called an integrated graphics card. So if you think of the computer's processor as the brain of the computer, right? So your Intel chip, right? Your i5 or your i7, your dual core, your quad core. These are maybe terms you've heard in computer marketing. That's your computer's brain. And like anyone else, the more that a computer has to think about, the more stressed out it gets, just like us, just like human beings. So when you are, you know, putting video together and audio together from different sources and then packaging it to send it out to the internet, that's a lot for your computer to think about, so it gets stressed out. If you have a discrete graphics card on your computer, it's like having a second brain for your computer to offload all of the video work onto it. And that way, your computer can keep doing the tasks of running Skype or your web browser or the OBS software itself. I think most Mac, even the MacBook Airs and the PowerBooks have a discrete graphics card. We have done some successful live streams from a MacBook Air, but if on the PC end of things, if you're in like the netbook like scale of items, then you're probably going to have some problems. I have found it's gaming laptops that frequently have the discrete graphics cards because, again, this is technology that is coming from video games a lot of the time. Having some horsepower is a good thing, and you can look online to see some of the recommended specifications for OBS. Then a quick question.
Are you talking about like an SD card sort of thing? Or?
No. So SD is storage.
Okay.
Let's call it graphics chip instead of graphics card.
Okay.
Right. NVIDIA is the company that provides the vast majority of these graphics chips, right, in computers. And so that's something to look out for. If you've got a computer that has an i5 or an i7 and it's a relatively recent computer, then give it a shot, right? The software is free, so it costs nothing to download and give it a try. And I can show you how to run some test broadcasts that like only you can see, so that you can get a sense of what your output quality is looking like. So, how many here have ever used a photo editing program like Photoshop or Canva or something like that? Okay, great. So you are familiar with, you import a picture, maybe a photograph that you took on a camera, and maybe you import another picture that you're going to, splice together or move around or resize. You're doing that with OBS, except you aren't just importing images. You're also importing video sources or even pre-recorded video files. And you compose these items, and you can, move them around or crop them or resize them. And you do that in what's called a scene. So think of a scene as your canvas. And a scene can be composed of still images, moving images, live video sources, live audio sources, recorded video and audio, right? And you can see where I have sources listed here, right? So a scene is a package of sources. This scene we use as our standby card. So when we go live on Facebook, we have the standby card go live, because when you go live on Facebook from your laptop, it's a little fuzzy as to when you actually go live,
yeah.
Right? And so we find that it's helpful, and this is a pretty standard practice among live streamers, that you go live to a standby card, make sure that you're actually live, and then, using this transition button, you switch to your live scene. So this is your preview window, and also where you do your editing. Then this is your live window. This is what is actually being broadcast to the internet if you are live streaming at that time. right? So you do your composing and editing in here, then you click the transition button to whatever is highlighted to make it go live. So it's like a scene switcher, basically, right? So in our standby card, we have this image of our logo, which is just a still image. And then we also have a video file that I just found on like a free stock footage video site, right? And it's just this orange swirling thing, and it plays on a loop, and it's an infinitely loop thing. And then I have a media file, or an audio file, I should say, that is, again, it's like a, you know, Creative Commons public domain piece of music that is an audio source, and it just plays on a loop in the background. So I'm going to break down how to actually add a source, right? So when you click on the plus button here, it brings up a queue of what kind of source do you want to add. Audio input refers to live audio coming in from like a microphone, and it could be a USB microphone. It could also be coming from your camera or a USB camera, right? Audio output capture refers to the audio that's playing within the computer at any given time. That's what I use when I'm broadcasting Skype interviews, and I'll get to that in just a moment. You can actually, under browser source, you can plug in a web address, and OBS will generate a web browser inside of itself and output that. Display capture is the entire display of the computer, and it could be like an extended display. So if you have an external monitor hooked up, you could just capture what's showing on that external monitor as opposed to what's on your laptop screen or what have you, which can be useful to keep certain things off air that you don't want to be broadcasting to the entire internet. Media source refers to, you know, MP3s, movie files, anything like that, which will automatically play when you transition to that scene, and you can choose to, you know, have them on a loop or whatever. Text, so you can render text natively within OBS, right? So you know, you've got your text, and just like when you're working with Photoshop or whatever, you can edit, you can resize, you can give it a stroke, you can give it a background, and the green kind of pattern background here is just a free desktop wallpaper that I pulled from the internet, right? And so it works in layers. So the sources are in layers. A source that is at the top of the sources list is going to display on top of whatever's below it, right? So this yellow ribbon background, right? That is, that's our little lower third thing. If I use the arrow key to move that up, now it's displaying on top of the text, right? So that's how the layer, just like Photoshop, Canva, you know, Illustrator, whatever you choose to use. It's a useful metaphor. Now, a little pro tip that I've only started doing recently is I found a high resolution, just like grid image, right? And OBS does not have the kind of like guides and grids that you might be used to in layout or photo editing stuff. And also, OBS does not have undo. Yes. So that can be tricky, right? So it's helpful to me when I'm trying to line things up, especially like when I have two people on screen. I bring up, okay, so this is an important feature. The little eyeball listed to the source indicates whether or not that source is visible or not. So you can keep a source within your scene, but make it invisible for the times you don't need it, right? Or you can make it disappear for if you need to get rid of it very quickly. So this grid is in my sources list, and I just make it invisible, and that gives me just a little bit of help when I'm, you know, trying to line up different elements and, you know, make them proportional or symmetrical or whatever. So that brings me to how we do our Skype interviews, which is a voice from the margins with Ajamu, the show that he did very recently with us for many months, and then David Cobb's show, Democracy in Action, which we've had Anoa on a couple times, right? And so those are shows where I'm producing and I'm coordinating a three-way Skype call. It's me, David Cobb, the host, and then our guest, right? The Skype call is playing out in my computer just like a regular Skype call. And I've got, within Skype, the guest over here in one window and my host over here in the other. And then their audio is playing through my computer. I use the audio output capture, which, again, if you have this as an audio source, then it's going to pump out to your live stream any audio that is playing through your computer at a time. So if you're running a radio station and you want to live stream it, you could use OBS to just, you know, have a feed going from your board or whatever into a computer and then just have that playing through OBS out to your live stream. That's one way you could do it, among other ways. All right. So very quickly here, this is a window capture. All right? And actually, I'm going to pull up David's because I haven't messed around with that as much. Okay. So you can have different collections of scenes within OBS. So I have a collection of scenes for Democracy in Action. I have a special collection of scenes for when we have a particular recurring guest. I have a scene collection for a broadcast that I do for my state Green Party in New York. I have a collection of scenes for when we were at the annual meeting. And that way, like if you have different shows, you know, I don't have to retype David Cobb's name every time, right? I just pull that up and then it's ready to go. So this is what's referred to as a window capture. And if you click on the gear icon down here, it brings up the settings for any given scene, right? So I have different windows that are open on my computer that OBS recognizes as available for input. So when I select Skype, also, you have the option of capturing your mouse cursor as it moves around the screen. If you're doing a demonstration or a tutorial, you might want to show that because you want to show people, you know, where they should be looking on screen. But if you're capturing a Skype call, you don't want your mouse window to be captured. Otherwise, what people are intently looking at your host and guest, they're going to see a mouse cursor moving around almost like a virtual fly on the screen. So these two windows here and here, are actually two different captures of the same program window. For every program that's open in your computer, that window can be captured. So I have one window that is cropped, right? And you can crop by pulling on these different, you know, items here, and you can recrop and resize however you want. So one is cropped to crop out David's video as it appears in the Skype call. And then the other is cropped to just crop out the guest, right? And if you have multiple guests, but you're only interviewing them one at a time, you can get them all on one Skype call at the beginning of your show, or beginning of your show, and just have different scenes set up so that you're cropping to that guest when you bring up their scene. Okay? I see some heads nodding, so I hope I don't sound completely crazy. All right. All right. In the couple minutes I have left, I'm going to show you how to pull in a video from a live camera source. So this is a Magewell capture card. Magewell, M-A-G-E. This runs like $200 to $300. It's not cheap, right? But what this does is it takes HDMI video that you can get out of a camcorder, and through a USB 3.0 cable or something more advanced than that. Regular, like USB 2.0 isn't going to work. It needs to be USB 3.0, right? That it actually can pull in video into your computer from a live camcorder, right? And it could be a $10,000 camera or a $200 camera. And it's gonna, it can pull in video or audio. And so if when we've been doing live... Okay, great. So, so this is the camera that we have now. And this is great. I can look at myself. It's just you can, you know, you can move this around, you can resize it, you know, whatever. And if you have more than one of these, or if you have an HDMI switcher hooked up to one of these, you can do multi-camera. And it's just going to pull in whatever's coming in through that signal. You can even pull in HDMI from another computer. Because if your computer has HDMI out, you can pull into one of these things. So like you could run Skype calls on one computer. And this is actually what we did for the Occupy Inauguration broadcast. We had Skype calls. We had one computer just dedicated for Skype calls that would then input into the live streaming computer. So this is not cheap, but it is really handy.
How much are they?
Like $300. And it comes with a the USB 3.0 cable. Now, you will be limited to the number of USB 3.0 ports that are on your machine. So.
Okay, so that enables you to live stream from, say, you have a professional quality video camera.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exciting. So, so when we were doing the debates, right, the last... So originally Democracy Now! Was simulcasting our debates. And they actually did the vice presidential one.
That's right.
The evening of the second presidential debate, they had a hardware meltdown. And it just broke. And Jill just had to go online and just, like, look at a camera and talk into her phone.
Literally,
right?
Like
yeah.
This.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, right, exactly. Live television, right? So Democracy Now!, which is, I mean, you know, they're amazing, right? So we had this final debate left, and the task that was given to me is, Michael, can you replicate what Democracy Now! Does using your video game laptop and, you know, like, some budget, but not a whole lot. And so that's when we had to do this deep dive into OBS. So we had a TV, right, just a regular TV, that had... No, actually, that's not
no,
what we did.
No, because Jill was in the hospital.
Right,
and we went to her hospital.
Well, I remember that part. That part I didn't write. So the frame is we did all of this from a hospital room because Jill was not feeling well. She had a respiratory infection, basically. So the hospital was amazing. But,
awesome.
Okay. Right, so the setup, because we were playing the debate... Then we would pause the debate, transition to Jill, and then go back to the debate from, like, where we had cut, right? Mm-hmm. So we had one computer that was playing the debate off of, like, a YouTube live stream. That was being pumped into this computer, right? So we would, like, play the debate, pause it on the computer, transition to a scene where the camera's facing Jill, and she's mic'd up. She's talking. By the way, she also has to see the debate. So I actually had I had the YouTube computer outputting to a regular TV monitor so that Jill could watch it and hear it. And going into here, right? And so yeah, so we'd cut to the camera of Jill, right? And she would give a response. Then I would unpause the debate and transition back to her, to it, right? So then people could watch all along in one window. It's crazy. Okay, so one last thing before I wrap up, which is that if you don't want to spend $300 on a capture card in addition to a camera, this can OBS can also just take a video feed from a USB webcam, right? Mm-hmm. So for like $100, $50, $70, whatever, you can get a high def webcam that you can mount onto a tripod or click onto your thing, and Facebook also will recognize this. So if you're not using OBS, Facebook does allow you to just stream straight from your computer as of like spring of this year. Mm-hmm. So you have that option. But, you know, the webcams on a lot of iPhones and other high-end phones are so good that you might choose just to stick with that, depending on what your needs are. And then also, like, you can have multiple audio input sources. Like, you could plug this in and just use it as a USB microphone, right? Because you're just if you just take it as an audio source, or if you have a USB microphone. So, like, this computer has a dedicated mini mic input, but I could also plug in USB microphones or a USB sound mixer, right? Mm-hmm. And take that as an audio import source into OBS and mix it all within there. So it's a deep well. It's a very deep well. And I have gone over time. I'm very sorry. So, you know, we've been talking about this like mostly like just a broadcast output medium, but this is an interactive medium. It's not just television on the internet, right? And so Jillian is going to talk more about like what you can do to really leverage the interactivity of this.
Thank you.
I promised you. Okay, what was your, very quickly?
What's the name of the program, the opposite, the one that's expensive?
OBS. The Wirecast.
Wirecast is the expensive one.
And they do have Undo, Les Rubin, Breton.
I don't know if they have Undo. The main benefits on Wirecast are on the back end of things in terms of like being able to broadcast to multiple sources at once and things like that. There is this one last thing. Restream.io. Restream.io is a service that allows you to simulcast to as many platforms as you want. Now, if you want to do to Facebook, then you need to pay like $15 per month. But they have a bunch of platforms that are built into it. So what you do is instead of connecting your computer to Facebook, you connect it to Restream.io, and then Restream.io connects to your Facebook account. And if we have time, we can briefly go over how to like how you actually link OBS to Facebook.
Do you want to do that? Jillian just said, so she actually has a whole social media workshop at 2:30.
Great, yeah. Go to that.
So instead of, so if you want to take that 5 minutes to actually go live, show how to go live and stuff.
Sure.
We invite you in this room, 2:30, if you want to hear more about the best practices and the interactive quality.
Just to show you real quick, this is the setup that I use for my my weekly stream that I do on Sunday afternoons for my state party, in which I do a lot of tutorials and things like that. So my webcam, right, is right there. That is showing me, and then I'm using my computer to run through either software that I'm demonstrating or a PowerPoint deck or whatever like that. So if you want to like do internal training materials for your organization or whatever, that's an option. Or just if you want to do a tutorial for the internet, then that's a thing. And it's just that it's the same video shot that we were looking at earlier. I just have it kind of shrunk down, and I put in the corner of the screen. And then this is a just a window capture. Is it just the web browser? All right. So how to actually go live? You can live stream from your personal Facebook page or from a your personal Facebook profile or a Facebook page. What you do is you go into Publishing Tools. You will need to have admin access to your Facebook page. And then you go into Videos. Then you go Live. And this stream key is the important thing, right? And so what you do is you copy this key, and then you go into OBS Settings, and under Stream, you paste it into there. And that acts as like a password to allow OBS or Wirecast, if you're using that, to knock on Facebook's door and say, I am an authorized video live stream from user Jill Stein for President. Please let me broadcast to her Facebook page. And since you have the right stream key, Facebook recognizes that, and it takes your broadcast live. Now, when you do that, when you click Next, the next window that comes up, if you've clicked Start Streaming on OBS, the next window that comes up will actually be a preview with audio of whatever's pumping out of your of OBS at the time. So that can startle some people sometimes, because if you've got microphones and things like that set up, it can set up a feedback loop. So if you're using Chrome, you can right-click on your tab and mute the tab so that you don't get audio feedback when you go to that preview screen.
What if you're using something else, like Firefox?
If you're using Windows, then you can use your volume mixer to mute that audio source. The other thing is you could just have headphones plugged in so that the audio that does come out just goes into headphones, and that way you're not getting an audio feedback loop that way. Okay? So from that next screen is also where you put in the text of your Facebook post and then the title for your video. So you go to Publishing Tools, Video, Live. That brings up this pop-up window. Here, I'll do it one more time.
Please.
Okay, so we're going to discard this. Okay, so I'm on the page here. So we'll do this. So I'm on the page. I'm logged in as an admin. Publishing Tools, right? Videos, Live. Gives me my stream key. I copy the stream key. I go into OBS settings. I go to stream. I paste in the stream key. I OK that. I go back to my web browser. I click next. That's where it brings up your preview window. And then it also brings up where you put in the text that goes in your post and the title of your video. Then you click go live from there. And that's when it actually takes you live. It takes some practice. So
this fundamentally changes a lot of things for us. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Now, what you can do is, just from the, if you want to test your setup, number one, you can sign up for a free Restream.io account and just stream to that as like a private sandbox for your streams. Another thing you can do is Restream.io. Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Mel. So you can... Can you go live from here? Add photos and videos.
I think there's a... No, you have to go to videos from the desktop.
Oh, yeah?
Videos and then live video. That's what I usually do.
Or maybe it's because we're already live here. If I go to my page... I don't expose you all to anything terrible or embarrassing, but okay. So there's a live video tab, right? Unable to find camera. It's fine. You'll be fine. Okay. So under this number, you do have the option to do OBS to a first personal Facebook page. You would take the stream key from here. Oh boy, I should refresh that as soon as I can. So what you can do is under public, right? Under who should see this? You could put only me. Then it's almost like recording a personal video for yourself, or friends accept, or specific friends. So if you have someone who that you want to basically like be your audience to test, you just set them as the destination, right? And then that's it. Okay. So that's how you actually go live, and then you know you monitor comments as they're coming in. You can ban people, which comes in handy.
Yes.
You can take a comment and hide it so that only they see it and their friends see it, and that way they don't know that they've been hidden. Yeah. It
works for the gluten picker.
So, like I said, it's a deep well. We are past time, so do go to Jillian's 2:30 p.m. social media site. Do you know the room
it's
number?
It's right here.
It's right here.
Yep.
So just come back here at 2:30. You know exactly where to be. Thank you all very much for coming.
There's a couple of questions.
Coming
on the stream.
Okay.
So first of all, what's the name model of the video capture card that you mentioned?
Oh, sure. This is a Magewell HDMI USB 3.0 capture card. And that's what's on the device. USB capture, HDMI, and the company is Magewell, Magewell. There are a lot of other HDMI capture cards on the market that are primarily designed for video game streamers, you might be able to use those for these purposes. I don't know. I've thought about experimenting with them, but in the end, I just went with the Magewell because I had used it before, and I already knew it. So, but you might be able to save $100 or $200 by getting a capture card that is primarily for video game streamers. Were there any questions?
The one other that came in was, can you record on the video camera while you're streaming from?
Absolutely, yes. And not only can you record on the video camera, but you can record a local, high-definition copy of your final output through OBS. So you're going to want to use an external memory storage device for this, a USB 3.0 either thumb drive or hard drive. And so under settings, under output, you have a recording section. And you can set your recording format. You can have there's tons of features in OBS I haven't even tried, right? I'm an intermediate at best at OBS. So you can record a final mix, a final video and audio mix of your output in that, right, at, you know, 720 or whatever. And so that way you don't just have to be recording your raw video, you're recording your final program if you've been cutting to different scenes and if you've been compositing different things together into a scene.
So you can use that as a podcast then?
You could. You absolutely, yes, you could then release that. So what we're implementing with GNN is the recorded video on Facebook of your live stream is not HD. It's 480 at best, and it's not great. So YouTube, however, can take an upload of up to 4K, right? Super high definition. So we want to use YouTube as the archive for our GNN programs because we can upload a higher quality archive version for people. And also it just, you know, reaches the people in that platform who may not be finding us on Facebook.
Right.
Or you could reduce that down to MP3. And just set release that as an audio podcast or whatever you want to do. Yes.
Where is the session being broadcast or recorded or available? Like you're recording it.
Oh, for this? On the Dr. Jill Stein Facebook page.
Yep.
And very soon at watchgnn.tv.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Thank you.
So thank you so much. Yeah. Enjoy your lunch.